Here.
Mickey Greig. Robin Gross.
Present.
Thank you. Norbert Klein.
Here, Norbert Klein.
Thank you, Norbert. Ross Rader.
I'm here.
Thank you. Tom Keller.
I'm present.
Bruce Tonkin here. Nicholas Lagergren.
Excuse me, Maria Farrell has joined.
Lucy Nichols.
I'm here.
Kyoshi Zuru. Do you hold any proxies, Lucy?
No.
Absent for now. Maureen Coverley sends her apologies. Alec Wilson. Is Alec Wilson on?
Alec was going possibly to send proxy, but I don't know if he has, Glenn.
I have not received anything, but I'll look in my mailbox now.
I think something may have come up because he had just emailed me a few minutes ago saying he was thinking he was going to try to send a proxy, but I don't know if he has yet.
Okay. Liaisons, do we have Suzanne Sen?
Yes.
Thank you, Suzanne. And Brett Fawcett?
Brett Fawcett has joined.
Oh, there we go. Welcome, Brett.
Thank you.
Okay.
I have received nothing from Alec Wilson, but if somebody else has...
I think we'll be right for quorum. Okay, so just going through the agenda, it's a very packed agenda, so several of the items we'll probably deal with fairly quickly. So we have the approval of the minutes, staff action, have a discussion about the WHOIS recommendation, follow up on IDNs, I'll let Carrie perhaps update us on that. New TLDs, next step in TLDs, discussion of bylaws changes. I might move that item up a bit further forward since we have quite a few guests that I think will raise that topic. And then we have a few issues reports at the end. So are there any other agenda items anyone wants to add at this point, given we've got about 12 so far?
Bruce?
Yeah.
This is Lucy. I sent you just a quick note this morning on the, I think it's agenda item 2, update from the staff.
Oh, yes.
I'm hoping that we'll get an update on the WIPO.
Okay. We'll deal with that under that item. Yep.
Thank you.
Under item 2. Okay. Anything else?
Bruce, call off.
Yep.
You want to mention the...
Sorry, can't hear you.
Oh, sorry, okay. Better like this?
Yeah. Yep.
Yes, much better.
Okay. Picked up the handset. Now, the latest update on this ICANN strategic planning process, but maybe that's something that you could forward to the GNSO, the council, talking about.
Yeah, Paul Toomey said he was going to send me something.
And he has.
Someone was going to send me something. I haven't seen it, though.
It should have come this morning, Bruce. Early this morning. Sorry,
anyway,
evening, your time.
But I would ask to have it under AOB, please, because the council has done a huge amount of work, including generating the Amsterdam. We could have brief discussion on it, just an update, that would be good.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I'll note that. So for the first item then is approval of the minutes of the last meetings. There's the minutes of the council meeting in Luxembourg on the 12th of July, and there's also the minutes of the GNSO council conference on the 28th of July. Would someone like to move that those minutes be accepted?
Yeah, Bruce, this is Ken Stubbs. I move the minutes for both meetings be accepted as presented.
Bruce, I would like to raise a point of order about the minutes.
Yes, go ahead.
I've noticed that our minutes are sometimes too cryptic to have necessary detail to be standalone resources, and I would just like to suggest that we take a hard look as the staff, and I would ask the staff to do this, to think about the level of detail that really is needed for the minutes to fully document discussion, particularly when there's a vote. And I believe that votes should be recorded in the minutes, not just a reference that so I've noted in a few instances that we have in our minutes not specified how votes took place. That makes the minutes challenging resources later, and as we're finding in our ongoing policy work, that's really a necessary tool.
Yeah, I'd be interested in specific examples on that, Marilyn, because I'm fairly careful that anything with the policy vote is explicit about how the votes are cast.
I know, and I don't think this is necessarily about policy, but even discussions when we're discussing topics, I just think we should look at the minutes, remembering that these are these need to be able to be relatively standalone. Very few people in the community or even we ourselves are going to be able to go back through the MP3 recordings historically to look for that level of detail.
Okay, well, we'll take that as noted. But also I'd recommend that people actually read the minutes and provide the comments as they're presented, because that's probably the best way that they'll improve. If people come and say, you know, I want to see more detail on this bit, or, you know, I want to see the vote recorded on that bit.
I'm happy to do that. I wasn't going to object to approving these minutes, but just to note this for further consideration, future consideration.
Ruth?
Okay.
Yeah, Ruth?
Yes, Ken.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is the reason I am inclined to record or to advocate accepting the minutes, it's always been my understanding that the principle used for minutes is to record what's decided, not necessarily what is said. I thought that the MP3 recordings are normally available if somebody wants to go in for detail. That's at least how I was taught.
Okay. All right. Anyone? Any other comments for or against the minutes? Okay. All those in favour of approving the minutes, please say aye.
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 Any against? And any abstentions? Okay, we'll note those minutes as passed. Item two is really just picking up staff action items from the last meeting. Then Halloran responded on the WHOIS recommendation and confirmed that the terminology clear and conspicuous was okay. Olaf has updated a number of times the paper on the past decisions related to new GTLDs. It seems we find something new every day in the archives, so that's getting more and more a complete picture. Lucy, you were asking a question on WIPO 2. Is either Olaf or Maria able to respond to Lucy's question from last week, which is essentially saying the question, as I understand it, is there any more, or is there current work going on producing a response to the GAC with respect to WIPO 2?
Quick answer from my side is that I certainly haven't done any work on that, and I have no information as to further development.
Maria,
it's Grant here.
Yeah.
I presume we're on item two of the agenda, are we?
Yes. This is staff reports, basically, here. Yeah.
Right. I have not received any list of current GNSO work items. Have I missed something?
No, I haven't received anything.
Yeah, same thing with Kiyoshi.
Well,
Hi, it's Maria here. Sorry. Hello?
Yes?
Maria here, just to say that I have just been on leave and actually provided them ahead of this call. I was travelling yesterday, but we can certainly give an update after the call if there are any outstanding issues.
But I think we could we just have a list of them verbally, maybe, because it's hard to be productive without at least knowing what the current work items are.
Well, may I just comment quickly on that? I was a little puzzled, I must say, by by the proposal. I thought it worked like this, that staff is tasked by the GNSO via the chair with a number of work items. And, well, we perform them, and we report back on the work items as such. Starting to list them, well, isn't that a bit superfluous?
Olive, I'm sorry. I am having trouble hearing you.
All right.
I am as well.
Well, all right. I'll speak up.
Thank you.
I was a bit puzzled, really, by the proposal, since, as I understand it, well, the GNSO is tasking staff. Staff is supporting the GNSO with a number of work items. And staff is tasked to do so through the GNSO chair. And, well, we report back on the substance of the work items. To report back with a list on what we have been tasked to do sounds to me like superfluous administration.
Bruce,
yeah, I think
Grant,
go ahead, Grant.
Olive, from my point of view, I would find it very useful if the staff provided to council ahead of time a list of all work items. And I'm thinking particularly, given Ross Rader's recent posting, which I have a great deal of sympathy for, which is that there is an apparent heap of work out there which is facing council and for which council, I think, is starting to lose track of and certainly is having difficulty prioritizing. So I, for one, would find it very useful if staff could provide council ahead of every call a list of work items, where they're at, and also a list of action items that may have arisen from this call or any other meetings outside of this call pertinent to the council. I would find that useful.
Then, if I understand you right, Grant, all off again, this would not sort of particularly pertain to what the staff is doing, but the amount of work items within the GNSO as such.
That's my understanding, yes, Olaf. It's basically saying that there are, there's obviously some, there's like who is task force work, there's some work that's just starting up on a transfers working group that Ross Rader's chairing. We're talking about a working group that Nicholas Lagergren's chairing. So it's kind of, if you like, a project plan saying these are all the projects currently underway by the GNSO Council, just maintaining that list for us so that we are able to prioritise, because it's very easy. We can see on the agenda today there's some requests to add more things to the list, and we just need to make sure that the resources we have available for all these things match the list.
Bruce, this is Lucy.
Yeah, go ahead, Lucy.
I understand what you're saying, and I think there's a need for that, but there's also a need for us to, for the council to get an update on projects or items that the staff are working on. And I think WIPO 3 is one of the, is a good example that there's been this report out there, or this recommendation that staff is supposed to be working on for the board, and it's been ongoing now for some time, and I know I personally don't have any idea of where you know what work has been done, where the staff is on presenting this recommendation to the board, and I think just from past discussions it's important that we know, you know, where they are in that work. So I think that's a good example of an item that we do need an update on where they are on that work.
Now, Olaf again, now we're spreading it even further. Now we should canvas all ICANN staff activities, which is certainly beyond, well, I mean, that's quite a much wider scope than what the GNSO work items are.
Bruce, it's Grant here.
Yeah, go ahead, Grant.
Well, if I agree with you, my thinking in listening to what Lucy's just asked for is that let's just suggest that we have now heard from Lucy that she would wish to have a status report on the staff work on a particular item being the WIPO 2 report. If that's a reasonable request, and I don't see why it's not a reasonable request, but if we think that's a reasonable request, then my suggestion is that goes on the action list for staff to report back at the next council meeting. And the list that I'm talking about, I think, should be restricted to, one, the items on the GNSO work plan, plus any action items that the task, sorry, that the staff have been tasked with report back on. But I agree with you, Olaf. I, for one, don't want to have a running status on something like WIPO 2. I think if it's of interest to the council or members of council to receive a report, a status report on that, then fine, let's action, task the staff to do that and just have a report back. That's my suggestion.
Bruce, it's Marilyn. I'd like to be in the queue.
And Aubrey, I'd like to be in the queue also.
So we have Marilyn, then Aubrey, anyone else? Go ahead, Marilyn.
I think that I need, first of all, to note that actually there's been a standing request for an update on WIPO 2 for some time. So I'm both aware of that and have heard that topic raised on previous council calls and have supported it. So let me just put that on the side table and address the purpose of a list of current GNSO work items. It seems to me that a tool must support the work of the council and therefore be a tool for the staff who supports this document, which identifies our work items, but also identifies work items which have a direct impact on us, that we may need to be considering. And I see this as a project management tool or a resource that helps us to manage our own time and helps us to give feedback and guidance to the staff who are working with us, but also to identify any resources we don't have. So it seems to me to be a reasonable tool and resource, and one that we ought to be able to do in a way that it has dual purposes and therefore it's worthwhile doing.
Okay, Avery?
Yeah, I definitely agree with the sentiment that we need have a way to track both the work...
Sorry, Bruce, I can't hear.
Okay, sorry. We definitely need to have a way to track both the work that the council has ahead of it, and also, I think, to track the work that the staff is doing at the request of or in cooperation with the council. And in definitely, I think, the idea of having a tool that tracks this is good. The other thing that I think would need to be in it is the target dates for when there is an update. I think, yes, the idea of having a running commentary or a running status is probably overkill, but certainly to have there will be an intermediate status on date such and such for staff work items, for GNSO council items that sub-teams or task forces or whatever are working for, seems like it'd be an essential thing to be able to know what we're doing.
Okay. Do you get a sense of that, Oliver? I think we pretty much have that. I think Marie has been maintaining a list for a couple of the council calls, and it sounds like since she's been on leave, it hasn't been updated. But I don't think we're inventing something new here. I think we're just saying any item in each meeting where, before the meeting, we just get an update on the different work items.
Right, Bruce, it's Maria here.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't provided, obviously, we're not continuing to give people the information we need. What I would like to know, the person who provides it, is, are the topics that are in the updates that have been provided, are the topics that need to be included that aren't at the moment, and also, is there more detail or information that needs to be included that isn't being included right now?
Bruce, it's Grant again.
Yep.
I think it's an excellent question, Maria, and may I suggest, in the interest of time, that question be deferred to the first suggested staff council planning process meeting, which I think would be in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay.
Hey, Bruce, this is Kurt.
Yeah, go ahead, Kurt.
It seems like we just talked about two items that are sort of linked, because Marilyn brought up making changes to the minutes, improving the minutes, so they provided better reporting. And well, now we're also talking about this topic. It seems like, in a way, they're linked. So why don't we just take that back with Glenn and Maria and Olaf and come up with some sort of plan that combines the requests on both of those, so that, you know, we're providing a good sort of reporting, you know, between the minutes and the reports we give.
Okay, thank you for that, Kurt. Okay, so the next item on the...
Bruce, it's Marilyn. I just want to go back to WIPO 2. I said I would put it on the site.
I did it myself, so I wasn't sure that we had closure on that. So.
I just want to be sure. This topic has been raised before. It is a topic of concern to the business constituency, and I'm aware from Lucy's comments and past requests on this to others as well. So if we could address how we get an update on that and have a timeline for that, and see if we could do that in writing in short term, if possible, I would greatly appreciate it.
Is that possible, now that Maria's back, Olaf, to get a response in, say, 7 days on that, just a short response to the council on, you know, I guess if there's a work plan related to that?
We can put forward a question to, because it's nothing ongoing from the policy staff side.
Right. So as far as your...
But that's not perhaps the full answer.
This correctly, there isn't any work going on in the policy staff on WIPO 2, but there may be somewhere else in ICANN. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, well, that's then the residual question mark.
Okay.
And we could raise the question amongst staff.
Okay. Are you okay with that, Lucy?
Yes, that's fine. And too, I just want to add a comment that I understand that the staff, all the work that staff has, and I'm not suggesting that, you know, I'm expecting them to have done anything. I just would like to know if any work has been done on it and where they see, as far as timing goes, when they're going to, because I know the board is waiting for a recommendation on WIPO 2 from the staff. And you know, again, I've asked this question on a number of occasions. All I want to know is, has any work been done, where they are? But I do appreciate, and again, my questions, you know, my intent on raising this issue is not to suggest that, you know, they should be working on it, that they should be at some point in their work on it. It's just I'd like a status report.
Yeah, so a status report could be that there's nothing currently underway, and the plan is to address it first quarter next year or something like that would be an appropriate report.
Wherever I am.
Okay. The next item is the timeline for the GNSO review. Liz, you're going to give us an idea of what dates we need to meet to achieve the board's request.
Yes, thank you, Bruce. Everyone will now have received the GNSO Phase 1 paper. It's more than the timeline. The timeline can be found on page 5, section F. I have put together that timeline on the basis of the limitations of the company secretary to submit papers to the board. In practical effect, it means that after I think a proposed call to deal with the GNSO review separately, I will incorporate...
Excuse me, Mr. Klein is joining.
If anyone has any further feedback just on the timeline, that would be super, but we are very, very constrained in what we can do on the basis of what we must do with respect to meeting the board's timeline for sending a resolution for the Sunday, December 4th meeting in Vancouver.
So what are the key dates? So at what date does it need to leave the council then? Is
sure.
It,
okay, I'll read them out to you.
October, is it? Or?
Yep, I'll read them out to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Today, Thursday, 18th of August, the meeting takes account, this paper takes account of feedback from GNSO council members, the board governance committee, and councillors more generally. On Thursday, the 23rd of August, between today and the 23rd of August, I'm hoping to distribute a formalised paper which captures any comment from today. To present on the 29th of August, I need to send the an information paper to the board in time for consideration for the September 15th meeting. I'm hoping that after that happens, Friday...
All right, Liz, can you just... Are you reading from your page 5 and 6 of your paper?
Yes, I am.
I've got a date, 23rd, and my next date is the 23rd of September.
Yep. If since that paper has been reviewed, it's been sent out last week in time for this meeting. I've had a further discussion with John Jeffrey that indicates that I must have any information paper that is going to be considered by the board ready on the 29th of August. So that means, and the other thing that has been included, Grant, which was happened after this paper was released, was the proposal that given the state of the agenda today, there would be not enough time to consider the paper in more detail. We have yet to set a date for another council meeting that would consider just this item rather than the whole list of on the agenda. So the timeline now has some extra dates. They are the 29th of August. I must send an information paper to the board in time for consideration for the 15th of September.
I followed you up on that point, Liz. When you say you must have an information paper for the board by, what is that board meeting in September?
The 15th of September, the board meeting has also changed from the 13th until the 15th.
Right. Why does there must be an information paper? I would have thought the must was that we need the paper to the board by the 31st of October for decision.
Bruce, I'm trying to... The resolution quite clearly says that the terms of reference will be developed in consultation between the staff, the GNSO Council, and the board. The staff have had some discussion during the week about the merit of giving the board more rather than less time to consider what we have in mind. Only the Board Governance Committee has seen this paper so far, but I'm assuming that it would have been forwarded by somebody if they wished it to be so. So that is just my... I'm very sensitive to the need for informing the board of the intentions of the GNSO Council and of the staff recommendations earlier rather than later.
Right, because
Bruce, it's Grant here.
Liz,
what you've presented to us in the paper and what we're now discussing is as a proposed timeline, is it appropriate now to have a discussion about your proposed approach and perhaps discuss alternate approaches?
Approaches to timelines or approaches to the work?
Approaches to the process in developing a terms of reference between the board, staff and council.
That's for the chair to decide.
Yeah, I think that's part... I think that is. This is the right time because this is really the timeline.
Okay.
We need to sort of work out the process.
I would like to suggest that given the board's resolution, and as you've noted, Liz, that it is to be a joint effort to produce the terms of reference. My suggestion is, firstly, that a subgroup of this council, a subgroup of the board, and I think you've already identified, if I hear you correctly, that is the governance council within the board, jointly meet with the support of staff to do just that. That's my first suggestion.
Sure, Grant, can I just handle that one straight up?
Sure.
I think Bruce had made that suggestion to include, I think, Bruce, did you also mean the inclusion of the chairs of the constituencies? Is that what you had intended?
No, what I had suggested, Liz, is sort of two phases. I think the first phase is that because the review is going to involve the constituencies directly, I suggested that we have a kind of an internal discussion between the council and the constituency officers. So that could be the chairs of the constituencies, might even be vice chairs. I'm not sure how the different constituencies are structured. And that's kind of getting the GNSO comments first. And then I was suggesting that we then have a follow-up call, as Grant suggested, with members of the board. I had suggested that we at least have the board members that were elected from the supporting organisations, so that would be, you know, two each from the ASO, CCNSO and GNSO, if you believe the governance committee as well, that's fine too. But I think that's then a meeting to discuss the terms of reference, rather than having a, you know, a document that's kind of given to one group and then the document's given to another group and there's not a dialogue.
Yeah, exactly. Grant, I think what Bruce has suggested is a good idea, but did you want to ask, did you have another question first that you had to add as well?
No, I think I'm supporting Bruce in the general sense. I don't think I'm seeking to be quite as suggestively prescriptive as Bruce has been. I, for one, think it's up to the board to choose who it is they want to have on their subgroup, and it's up to us to choose who we want to have on our subgroup. But certainly I think it would be beneficial for the board, a subgroup of the board, a subgroup of council.
Pardon me, please. Marilyn Kate has joined.
And the staff to work together, as opposed to flick papers backwards and forwards and have
I appreciate that. I think that that's a good idea. I suppose cutting right to the chase, but Bruce, this is your call, not mine. Could we, what Bruce has suggested then is a council and constituency officers call. That means one date, and then we need, I think, to establish the next date, and suggestions around that are helpful. Remembering that after the 30th of October...
Excuse me, please. Anthony Harris has joined.
After the 30th of October, we need to be in a position to send papers to the company secretary for submission to the board with a resolution that would enable the terms of reference to take place. So between now and then...
My view is that's view that as the hard deadline.
Yep.
And then look at a process between now and then. And I think rather than necessarily being focused on when we provide an informational paper for discussion in a particular board meeting, I prefer the focus being, say, okay, we're having a meeting first to amongst the GNSO to provide our input, and you would update the paper after that.
Yep.
I think at that point it's appropriate to send the paper to the whole board.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be synchronised with a board meeting. It just means, you know, they get the paper for the whole board.
Yep.
And then we schedule a call with the subset of the board. As Grant says, whatever the board thinks is appropriate is that subset. I had nearly made a suggestion. And then we have a dialogue about that, and then there's an update, and then you've got to the final paper. So, I mean, I don't really see that we need to have lots of meetings.
And that's fine. It's absolutely fine. And that then would be post the... I'll just produce a Phase 2 paper after those meetings have happened, and that's absolutely fine. If you want to suggest a date, a time for the call, that would be helpful. And if I have my druthers, could it be early next week rather than later, just to give me enough time to put everything together?
Can we perhaps, Marilyn, note that we need a time for this call? We're going to have other calls we need to schedule and do the scheduling all at one time, if that's possible?
I think that would be my preference, because there's a couple of other topics I think we need to schedule calls for.
Yeah, cool. Great.
Let's see that later in the meeting. But, yeah, I agree. We want to get an idea of... I'd rather kind of provisionally schedule the two meetings, the meeting at the GNSO level and the meeting at the
bigger level, So, Bruce, did you mean provisionally schedule now or provisionally schedule later in the agenda?
Later in the agenda, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Terrific. Just as a clarification.
I have another contribution to the process, and that is, I note, Liz, in your current paper, you talk about distributing, quote, a formalised paper on the 23rd of August, leaving aside the date.
Yep.
My question to you is that formalised paper a draft terms of reference? Because my suggestion, given the shortness of time and getting to the end goal of October of being a draft terms of reference, that it be a draft terms of reference, not an information paper, but in fact a draft terms of reference.
Yeah, sure.
And Bruce, can I comment, please?
I'll need to come back and comment.
So you're confirming that your next input to the council will be a draft terms of reference?
I'm happy to do that. If you would like, Grant, in time for the meeting that is going to come up, which will be scheduled later in this agenda, which would be for council and constituency officers for that call. I'm happy to do that.
Please, Bruce, I'd like to make a comment on that.
Yeah, go ahead, ma'am.
I'd like to like us to have a little bit of a conversation about whether we're expecting staff to develop the draft terms of reference by that meeting without more dialogue with the counselors who are going to be engaging in that. I appreciate, Grant, the interest in moving things along, but I wonder if in fact perhaps that means that there has to be some significant online work in the meantime in order to provide input to staff.
Oh, if I can just answer your question, Marilyn. Liz was jumping a little ahead of me. My suggestion is that the draft terms of reference be an output of the first council meeting call and an input to the first board/council meeting.
I see. I'm much more comfortable with that. Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, I think that's how I'd view it, too.
Yeah. Bruce, could I just have a clarifying question
for
Marilyn, please?
Liz?
Yeah. Marilyn, given that there is a lot of input to be taken account of over the next couple of months, anyone who is able to contribute online at any point, it's fantastically valuable for me, because what it means is that we can actually do things in a cumulative fashion, and then I can prepare the paper as we need, and that it reflects commentary as we go along, rather than doing it in the last 3 minutes of any kind of call that we make. So just asking for prior notice of input on any item at all in any part of the Phase 1 paper would be fantastic, because that will help me make sure that we can meet the deadlines, which are quite tight, for both the first call and the second one.
Yep, I think that's absolutely... I think it's important that people do their own kind of red line and forward that to the council list.
Bruce?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry to bother you. I'd like to point out for time management situation, we're 45 minutes into the call, and we're on, unless I'm wrong, the first agenda, item number 2, just the first item. Maybe we better take a close look at what we have left to do in the next, during the balance of the call, and there may be some items we might want to reshuffle. I believe you mentioned that there were significant numbers of additional parties on the call.
Yes, I quite agree, Ken. And the next item, I think we've finished this item basically, unless there's any other further comments. Okay, the next item, and this is one of the reasons why I have invited members of the item number 3, which is the revised consensus recommendation with respect to improving notification and consent. The chair of the WHOIS task force, Jordan, has sent a note to council requesting we reconsider that, I guess. Jordan, are you able to give a bit of a summary of the concerns raised by the task force on this recommendation?
Sure. I do just want to clarify that this issue came up fairly late during our last call, so we certainly haven't reached anything I would say resembles a consensus of the task force, but I think an issue was raised that I think a number of us agreed was significant, and we certainly wanted to make the council aware of it prior to making a decision on the recommendation, which I think was scheduled for today. But in any case, the issue that was raised was that there was some concern that the recommendations to improve notice would somehow constitute a waiver on behalf of the registrant with regards to their privacy interests. So essentially, because it would be made absolutely clear to them, hopefully, their information was going to be used at the published in the WHOIS, that somehow that would constitute an explicit agreement on their part and a waiver of their privacy rights. And we haven't had the opportunity. This was not an issue that was raised during the initial discussion within the task force. It's certainly not the intent of the recommendations. and some people believe that, that this may constitute a waiver. Some people don't. We haven't received. I think Kathy Kleiman mentioned that some outside person not associated with the ICANN process had come to a legal opinion. But we haven't received our own legal advice on this, and certainly I don't think the council has either. So the main intent of my note was simply to make the council aware that this issue existed and to encourage the council to consider it. Council could certainly consider the issue itself, could ask the task force to look at this issue, which I do think would require an amendment to our terms of reference, or can simply some members of the task force suggest that the council might just want to defer voting on this until it was part of a package that of recommendations that included I guess privacy changes to improve privacy, which would make the waiver issue perhaps moot. So that's sort of a summary of our discussion, which prompted my note.
Okay, thank you, Jordan. I will note that the recommendation, or proposed recommendation, actually asks for the registration agreement to state the purposes of the WHOIS service and the purposes of the different contacts. And the current terms of reference of the WHOIS task force is to develop the purpose of the WHOIS service and you know, define the purposes of the contacts. So to an extent, even if we approve this today, we couldn't really implement it until the task force has finished its work on purposes anyway. So it, I don't think that in terms of a dependency, there's clearly a dependency on the what the output of the task force is before this gets implemented. And I think some of the issues that may, some of the legal questions around privacy are likely to have dependencies on what the purposes are as well. So it's hard to perhaps get really accurate legal advice here if the task force specifies the purpose of the WHOIS in a particular way. And usually when you're agreeing to something, you're agreeing to use of data for a particular purpose. So I guess what I'm saying is there's dependencies on that work. Would members of the council like to comment or suggest what action the council would like to take at this point?
Bruce, it's Phil Colebrook here. Can I get in the
Go ahead, Phil.
You? Yeah, it was actually my first attendance on the WHOIS task force, being a recent member, but certainly seeing this issue raised did raise serious concerns of me as to particularly pertinent legal issues. Not something I've previously been aware of, but certainly something that that we on the registry constituency anyway would like to look into further before actually moving ahead and possibly making recommendations that may set in motion legal consequences which we are not aware of. So in that respect, anyway, I would prefer a deferral on this issue, despite the fact that I know that we have a pressing need to move ahead on these. I think this is the level of debate that was generated showed that there was a significant issue here.
Okay, anyone else want to speak to this item?
I do, Bruce. It's Marilyn.
Yep, Marilyn. I'll just take a cue. Anyone other than Marilyn?
I'd like to clarify something that Jordan had mentioned earlier, Bruce, if I could, please.
Okay, I'll put you in the queue. Ross, anyone else?
This is Aubrey, can I get on?
Sorry, who was that?
Aubrey, can I get on?
Oh, Aubrey, yes, Aubrey. Anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Marilyn.
Given that Ross wants to clarify something, I'd be happy to defer to him, since that may inform the discussion.
Go ahead, Ross.
Jordan had mentioned that there was really two schools of thought on this recommendation, and I think there's actually three. So he'd stated that there were those that think this is a waiver, those that don't think this is a waiver, but I think there's also a third group that I specifically fall into. I don't know what this recommendation constitutes. So, you know, where possible, I would recommend to the council that we seek to understand what the implications are for these recommendations and be comfortable with that, whatever that outcome is. And I'm not sure that was quite explicit enough in Jordan's commentary for my likings. I just wanted to, to get that.
I know I did see a few, I did read the WHOIS task force, and there was a few sort of questions and asking for legal advice. I didn't feel at a council level we actually had a well-formulated question to actually seek legal advice on. So that's still an open offer. If a member of council has can formulate the question properly, I'll certainly take that to the general council for a response.
The
Marilyn, go ahead. Sorry, Ross.
The question being too broad or too specific as currently formulated.
I don't have a question, I guess is my problem,
okay.
Ross. I don't have a question that's been submitted to council.
I'm happy to take a crack at that, if that's the case.
Marilyn, go ahead.
Thank you, Bruce. I was not able to be on the task force call, but I have discussed the discussion with some of the task force members who were on the call. I have a view that this issue that we have a procedural problem in the task force to deal with, and that we should deal with it within the task force. And that is when topics have been thoroughly discussed and we've gone out for public comment and we haven't gotten issues raised, at some point we really have to take responsibility for how we move forward. Having said that, on this particular issue, I, as a counselor, could support our deferring a decision, but I, while other work is done, but I note that really, in my view, the level of the discussion as it took place was not a substantive discussion. And there have been earlier substantive discussions on what the RAA provides in terms of notice that I think should be informative to the task force and even to the council. However, given that some feel it's not, I could support the idea of our trying to figure out if we could develop a question, articulate it in a way that it is bounded and understandable, and examine how we might proceed to address getting an answer to that question. I think we need, however, to ask the task force, and I'm part of the task force, to look at how they are going to address instances like the one that came up, which has some procedural implications in the future, so that everyone in the task force is informed of that procedure.
Yeah, I think my concern was that the way it was kind of expressed to me is there might be a problem, but if you express something like that, you could do that to anything. I mean, there might be a problem with security here. There might be a problem with the punctuation. You know, you can sort of keep on going like that. You eventually got to come back and say, this is where we think the problem is, and you describe that sufficiently, and then we can have a question about how do we fix that problem. But I haven't really had anyone, haven't seen anything that says this is, it's not just a might be, this is a example of how it would cause a problem for privacy rights, and then we can, you know, work off a concrete example.
Bruce, Jordan, could you add me? I think I could. I'd actually ask that Kathy Kleiman, I think she's on the call, had raised a substantive legal opinion, I think, to define the problem. I just wasn't comfortable trying to articulate it properly because I hadn't seen it yet.
Kathy, I think you're on the call.
I am on the call. Can you hear me?
Just to respond to the issue of, you know, is there a defined question, I guess?
Can I address the issue of whether we have opinions on whether this could be interpreted as a waiver, whether the recommendation could be interpreted as a waiver?
You answer the question how you wish. It's up to you.
Okay. I was not on Task Force 1, but when I was on Task Force 2, and when I talked with Task Force 1 members, it was never the intent of anyone I spoke with that a simple notice and consent be construed as a waiver. But we've gotten at least two opinions on this from two separate places, which raise the problem and kind of the urgency and the last who is task force meeting. The first opinion, and we don't have it in writing because he's on the road and he's traveling all the time, is Mark Rotenberg, the executive director and founder of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. And what he said is that when asked to review it, is that the draft that you're looking at of the recommendation could be construed as a waiver by some. I mean, the reason for its creation was that registrants don't know that their data is going out into this kind of public, global, WHOIS real-time database. And so here we're saying, look, you should know. You know, it's clear and conspicuous. Know what's happening to this data. If people choose to go forward, even though this is a contract of adhesion, even though it's not negotiated, even though they may have considerable rights under their national laws, which Task Force 2, my task force, has documented at great length, some will argue, according to Mark Rotenberg, many may argue that this is a waiver, that they've chosen to go forward, that they've consented to the disclosure of all this data, even though they had no negotiating power. Surprisingly, this is exactly the position that was taken by the Internet Service Provider constituency. And I hope I don't speak out of hand, but this comes from the ISPCP position paper on Recommendation 2. This is the recommendation that has not yet come before you on national exceptions that we need to allow registrars to have some kind of exception in case that they are targeted by their national law enforcement or data protection officials under their national law and said, hey, wait a second, what you're publishing on personal data is not consistent with our laws. So this is their commentary on Recommendation 2. And I quote, accordingly, once more conspicuous disclosure is provided and consent obtained, the subsequent use of the registrant data for WHOIS purposes pursuant to the ICANN contract is not likely to be in conflict with local or national laws, close quote. So there is a strong sense of the ISP constituency supporting Mark Rotenberg, you know, not intentionally, but they're coming to the conclusion that also there is a likelihood of a waiver here, that if people have enough information about how their WHOIS data is used, then they may waive their privacy rights that are given them under national law. And, of course, the council has just set in action with the terms of reference a whole set of questions regarding the future of WHOIS and whether we should reformulate it and reform it. And so what we talked about, my interpretation of our task force call last week, was that no one wants to bypass or jump or leave the reforming of the WHOIS. We want to go through that process, and we don't want to kind of inadvertently waive any privacy rights.
I think just in the interest of time, I think that's kind of helped articulate the concern, so I think that's useful.
Bruce, I want to be back in the queue at the end of this to offer a clarifying remark. It's Marilyn.
And Tony Harris also, since our constituency has been named.
Robin Gross, be in the queue also.
Sorry, who is that?
Robin Gross.
Oh, Robin, okay. Anyone else?
I'd like to be in the queue as well, Bruce, please.
Okay. Anyone else?
Brett, can I get in the queue as well?
Sorry, who's that? Who was that? Sorry? The last speaker that asked to be in the queue?
I believe that was Brett.
Oh, Brett. Thank you. Avery, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Just a short comment. In terms of the recommendations or the notion that the council should now take this issue and start to understand it and review it as opposed to sending it back to the WHOIS task force. I think that having received a recommendation from them and having started to talk out the issue and sort of looking at the critical issue of the privacy rights and getting the legal opinion, I think we should certainly defer approval of this, but I do think that the council should at this point be discussing it, and if after that discussion it decides that there's something that needs to be worked, then that's a decision. Does that go back to the task force, or how does it get dealt with? But I don't think that the council should just basically say, oh, there's another question, and send it back. And, and I think that there's other issues when looking at this recommendation that sort of all go into the package. For example, looking at whether the 1A is indeed clear and understandable to the common registrant and issues like that. So not only are we perhaps putting something in that threatens privacy, but we're not even making a clear statement that it does. So I do believe that the council should certainly deal with this before just quickly sending it back.
Okay, thank you, Avery. Marilyn?
I'm going to note for the record and by the minutes that, in fact, the task force did not receive an opinion from Mark Rodenberg, but a constituency who is represented on the task force did bring in information which is related, and that's very important to do. But we have to be careful in the accuracy of our reporting in the minutes. Secondly, I think that my comment earlier that the task force, under the guidance and leadership of its chair, needs to address procedural issues so that we're not put in a situation of constituencies needing to say, let me explain what my statement means in public, but that is worked out in the task force. So I reiterate my suggestion that working under the of our chair, we have some procedural work to agree to enable us to work effectively when there is this amount of difference of opinion.
Attorney Harris?
Yes, just two short things. First of all, we don't agree with Kathy's appraisal of our comment. We don't come to the same conclusion rereading it. And secondly, in any case, that comment is not a part of the recommendation. So, you know, I don't see the point.
Okay. Robin Gross?
Hi. Yeah, I would just like to briefly state that I agree that I think we should defer this vote until we've had a chance to look at the privacy implications more clearly. I think Mark Rotenberg is right to be concerned about a possible waiver of privacy rights here, and I think that was never supposed to be the intent of the task force, and so it's a great concern, and I think we need to defer our vote until we've had a chance to really look carefully at that. So I wanted to introduce a formal question to the council, and I'll just send that to the legal council, and I'll just send that around via email, so maybe we could get the legal council an opinion from the legal council on this question of privacy rights and a waiver of them. Thanks.
Bruce, this is Ken. Will you put me in the queue, please?
Okay. Yeah, certainly, Robin, and I think, you know, it'll help if someone puts in writing. And you know, it sounds like Kathy's doing some work behind the scenes, and yourself, and maybe Ross as well. But I think if we can have a well-formulated description, I guess, of what the concern is, and then we can certainly get some external advice on that through the General Counsel to help advise the...
Excuse me, Mr. Tarathia is joining.
Who have I got next? Ross Rayner?
Yeah, I just wanted to speak quickly. I think Marilyn touched on some great points around process. You know, at this point, I think it's very, very important that we continue to move this issue forward. And I apologize, you know, as the person that opened up this can of worms at the task force level for introducing this level of apparent confusion. I think it's very clear what we as council must do, but I think it's also very clear that it's council that must do this work. And really, we need to just get down to understand what the implications of this recommendation is, and then either be comfortable with those implications or not. I don't think that this constitutes a massive delay or council putting its foot down in front of these recommendations or somehow reversing these recommendations, but rather a very simple set of clarifications we need to have. But to the extent that we can move that quickly, I'll be very, very happy with it. Thanks, Bruce.
Okay. Thank you, Ross. Brett?
In the ALAC, one of the things that we talked about was that we like the disclosure that we've talked about within the task force and would be in favor of it. But we'd not be in favor of it if it reduces privacy rights. So the resolution of this question would affect the at-large support for it. That's the first point that I wanted to make. Second point I wanted to make is I wonder whether a simple statement at the end of the disclosure that says something to the effect of, you know, this is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as, a waiver of any rights you may have under, you know, applicable national laws, period, would be sufficient to clarify this problem. And you know, I think that it's something that we could address pretty quickly back in the task force and maybe get a revised recommendation to the council as simply as adding a statement like that to the end that would satisfy everyone. Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you, Brent. Ken Stubbs?
Yes, thank you. Two things. First of all, I'd like to strongly support Robin's request that we have some sort of legal interpretation on this. Also, I'd like to acknowledge the fact that if we take the suggestion that Brett has there, we need to make certain that this is displayed in a prominent section of the registration agreement. Sometimes these agreements are beginning to look like automobile rental contracts, and I think it needs to be clearly stated in a way that cannot be missed by a registrant. So I don't know how we can, I hate to use the word impose, but if we're working on a policy here anyway, how this can be, how this right can be protected or how this need can be ensured. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Was there anyone else to speak to it?
Bruce, it's Jordan. Can I just make a quick clarifying comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Jordan.
Brett said that he thought the task force could probably deal with this issue pretty quickly. I do just want to clarify that we're not chartered to work on this issue anymore at all. And so our current terms of reference wouldn't include... I don't plan on spending a second more on this unless the council instructs us to.
Jordan? I guess my recommendation is that we don't send it back to the task force, because I think the task force needs to focus on I guess, some of the core issues, such as the who is purpose and possible changes to access based on that purpose. What I do think the council can manage is, and certainly any of the task force members can provide input to the council through their relevant representatives. I think the council can certainly handle getting further advice, and if council members want to suggest wording, and it's welcome to suggest wording such as he said, that I think the council can then manage the changes to that resolution. So my recommendation would be that we keep it at the council for now, but we do seek further advice on the implications of this recommendation. We work between now and the next sort of major council meeting to get that advice. So I would propose a procedural motion that we defer voting on this recommendation at this meeting, and the council seeks some legal advice on the implications that have been raised with respect to privacy. Would anyone like to second that procedural motion?
I'll second that, Bruce.
Anyone like to speak for or against that motion?
I'll speak in support of it, Bruce. It's Marilyn.
Anyone else? Okay. I think we can probably just vote. I think we're just dealing procedurally here, so I think we'll just vote by saying aye if you're in favour, and then if you're against and so forth. So if you're in favour, please say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, we'll note that procedural motion is passed. And I thank the members of the WHOIS Task Force that joined us on the call and found that useful. The next item I'd like to jump to is the proposal that was put forward by Marilyn Cade on proposed changes to the bylaws, which is item 8. And again, we have a few people on the call available to address that point. Do you want to start first, Marilyn, just introduce that item?
I would actually suggest that I would like to defer to representatives of the registrar constituency. I did introduce the item because I added an amendment to work that they had done. My recommendation would be to ask them to introduce the item, and then I will briefly address merely the section I added, if that's acceptable.
Do we have John Nevitt or Barbon?
This is John Evans, Bruce.
Okay, John, go ahead.
Sure, thanks. I know we're running over, so I won't give a whole history of background, and I know everyone lived through the Luxembourg meeting and understood what happened there. But essentially, for the past almost year, the registrar community has had some concerns about the contracting process and the right of the community to have an opportunity to be, of notice and to be heard with regard to ICANN-related contracts. It first came up in November of 2004 when VeriSign had an amendment to the .NET and .com contracts with the registrars approved without registrars' input, knowledge, or an opportunity to be heard. After that happened, everyone knows what happened with the .NET agreement, where material changes were made to the .NET agreement, again, signed by ICANN and the registry, again, without knowledge, input, or comment from the community. So to address those concerns, we drafted an amendment to the ICANN bylaws to support the ICANN's core value and purpose, which is to operate in an open and transparent manner and consistent with procedures designed to ensure fairness. Unfortunately, we feel like we have to change the bylaws to ensure this open and transparency in the contracting process. So what we did was we made some suggested changes to Article 3 transparency in Section 6, which relates to a notice and comment period currently on policy actions, and we added contract approvals on that. And I want to point out that it's not all contracts. We limited it to specific contracts that are material or that substantially affect the operation of the Internet or third parties. We're not looking for, the maintenance agreement with the various ICANN offices or something like that. We're looking at the major material contracts for that impact the community. And what we're looking for is, just like we have currently with policy actions, a 21-day advance notice and opportunity to be heard before the board approves the contracts. Essentially, right now we're in a position of trying to renegotiate a contract with a private for-profit company that's already signed, and there's very little leverage for us to do that. So before the board approves the contracts, and the contract's obviously signed by ICANN, we want to have an opportunity to be heard and at least an opportunity to review the agreements. And then we also suggested changes in Article 15, Section 1, which deals directly with contracts. So you'll see the two changes that Marilyn circulated. Marilyn then went ahead and added Section 1D, Section 6, and we're supportive of that as well, and she could talk about that. And so that's where we are. We're looking for the GNSO to support the amendments to the bylaws to ensure open and transparency in the contracting process.
Thank you, John. Marilyn, did you want to address your amendment?
Certainly. I added Section D because in reading the changes proposed by the registrars, which I personally support, I noted that it was quite clear that ICANN is required in C to consult with the GAC on policy, on public policy. I had thought it was clear from the transparency principle that ICANN must consult with the relevant supporting organization. I note, however, that in the .NET negotiation, changes were made in the contract which affect the standing of consensus policy in the definition of security stability and also in the definition of new registry services, which was not, which is at variance, even if minimally so, from the consensus policy that council had underway. I would have expected that there needed to be a consultation, even if it were a closed consultation with council, on those issues since they involve consensus policy. Having observed behaviorally that consultation was not guaranteed by the bylaws, I added a section that requiring a consultation with the relevant supporting organization. I will offer a friendly amendment to my my own proposal, and that is striking the word public in D in relation to policy, since I understand that that may be a sensitive topic to the GAC, and really what I intended to capture were the policy obligations and responsibilities of this council.
Okay, thank you, Marilyn. Is John Jeffrey on the...
Yes, I am, Bruce.
Thank you, John. I had heard there was some concern, you understand the intent is to make sure that major agreements, such as registry agreements, that can affect many parties, go through some sort of public review before ICANN finally assigns them. But I understand there were some concerns with the current drafting that we may also be including other types of contracts. I just wondered if you were able to comment on that.
We certainly understand from the staff side that this is a recommendation around the issues that were raised in Luxembourg and that have been articulated today. I think that Maryland's proposed change to the language is an important one. I think that there's also some question regarding whether the scope of the language on which contracts would be included in such a process is concise enough. So I think clearly we appreciate the concept, and we think that this is something that the board should take up and should consider. But as to passing on specific language, I don't think that that's appropriate at this time, and it would, and certainly, as with any bylaw change, there would be a public comment period that would be required before it could be approved.
So, John, is it reasonable for the council to support these changes and transmit them to the board, and then the board then be seeking advice from you on how best to meet the intent of the GNSO? Is that an action that makes sense?
Yes, I assume the board would seek the general counsel's office advice, and the board would also either request additional information from the council or submit it to a public comment process and take those comments into account.
Okay, thank you. Would anyone like to sort of speak, I guess, for or against the proposed changes?
Bruce, this is Bhavan here. I just wanted to reiterate what John Nevitt already mentioned categorically, and I think to a slight response to what John Jeffrey said, that clearly the intention is not to micromanage or to try and create a process for every contract, but it's important to ensure that what we're trying to achieve out here is to ensure that anything that affects the community has at least sufficient feedback period from the community. So I think we've exchanged some notes with John Jeffrey. We'd be open to any friendly amendment to these wordings. As John rightly mentioned, that some wordings could be changed in order to reflect the specific aspects that he's concerned with. But I think in general, conversations that we've had both within registrars and with others in the community, there's been significant level of support in terms of direction to try and get these changes incorporated or get specific changes that everybody's comfortable with incorporated to ensure that situations like these do not repeat, basically.
Okay, thank you, Bob. John, just to clarify comment there, Barbara has suggested that you may provide a friendly amendment or suggest a change. I believe what I heard you say, though, was that you would prefer to wait until it had gone to the board. Was that what you were saying, rather than be offering changes at this point?
I could certainly suggest changes, but I'm not certain that would carry the day. The board would consider a review on its own of the language, and it would also require a public comment period, which may have additional input into that language.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments for or against?
This is Aubrey. Can I make a comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Aubrey.
Okay, yeah, I think, while we could wordsmith it and change it, I think given the fact that it does need to go through process. It does need to go through legal control, legal editing and such. But I do believe it's important to pass on the principle that these changes suggest. So I'm certainly in support of passing this on as a recommendation to the board.
Okay. Anyone else?
Bruce, it's Phil here, Phil Goldbrook.
Yeah, go ahead, Phil.
Just really a procedural matter, not addressing the substance of the motion, but we're in the middle of a summer holiday here, as many of you are, and we're finding it actually particularly hard to get advice promptly enough to address these concerns. Actually, as a registry, this goes strongly affects our business processes, and it's an important point that we need to get independent advice from. So that's the only caveat that I have, is that the relatively short amount of time at this time of year has made it difficult for us to determine particular issues with great clarity.
I think, as it was suggested by John, that if the council did choose to send this to the board, the board would first consider it, and then before anything happened further to that, it would be put out to public comment, presumably for
sure.
30 days or so, and at that stage, no doubt, the registry constituency could provide a far more substantive commentary, particularly around clarifying some of the wording and things. So I guess what I'm saying is, I'm not saying which way the motion will, if the motion goes either way, but just saying that it wouldn't be your last opportunity.
Okay, thanks, Bruce.
Okay, well, I guess I think people have heard. I'm open to, if someone wants to actually put the motion to a vote, I'm happy to do that, or if people feel that they want to have more time, that's fine too. So I'm open to the council as to what you want to do next.
Bruce, I would like to offer a motion. It's Marilyn, that the council vote to support sending forward the contribution as has been presented to the council, with advice from the council that the board move forward in incorporating these changes as bylaw changes following the applicable formal process necessary to achieve bylaw changes.
Mrs. Avery, I'd second that.
Bruce, Carrie to speak, please.
Yes, go ahead, Carrie.
I'd like to offer make a subsidiary motion to defer the vote on the motion that's just been raised until we can have another little bit of time to get people back on their vacations. Europe is out to lunch right now.
And Bruce, I would like to provide a response, if I can, within the rules of order.
Yes, go ahead, Marilyn.
I've posted this to people before. I would like to say it for the record and have it minuted, and that is that this the need for these changes arose out of actions that occurred that affected the council's role and affected the broad community in Luxembourg. Extensive discussion took place in public forums, in the council itself, in the constituencies. The outcome of what happened in the .NET agreement is what has led to the proposal for these bylaw changes. Thus, this is not a new topic, and there has been extensive discussion in spite of the holidays on this topic. Secondly, if this motion carries, the board will put forward a public comment process, and further comments can be provided by anyone in the community at that time.
Okay, what I might do then, I'll first perhaps get a vote on, well, first, is there a seconder to...
I did second it, but it got overshadowed by the subsidiary motion. I did say a second.
Yes, I picked that up, Avery. I'm just wondering about, is there a seconder for the subsidiary motion?
Ah, sorry.
Bruce, it's Phil Colebrook here. Yes, I'll second Carrie's motion, subsidiary motion.
Okay. I'm going to put Carrie's motion to the vote, and that motion is basically, as I understand it, Carrie, that we defer voting on this motion that's been put forward by Marilyn and Avery until what, for a week or what?
That broaches some discussion. I'm a little bit uncertain about when some people are actually going to be back. Vacation rolls for quite a number of months in Europe, and I believe August is is still in the middle of it. So it would be to our next regular meeting or the one past that even.
Okay. So I just want to do a motion quite specific, though. When do you want to defer the motion to?
Okay, middle of September.
Okay. So the motion that you have is to defer voting on this until the middle of September. And do you accept that, Philip?
Yes, that works for me, Bruce. Thanks.
Okay. So I'll now put this motion to a vote.
Bruce?
Yes?
Bruce? Yeah. Can we discuss this in any way whatsoever prior to the...
Yes. Yeah, we can.
Yeah. One of the reasons that it's somewhat confusing at this point in time is it appears that we're voting on language rather than a concept. And I think to a great extent that's one of the things that we wanted to discuss in more depth in our constituency. But we've had virtually no time at all to do that since the motion was tabled or put before the council. So that's a little more background there.
Okay, thank you, Ken. Anyone else want to speak on this particular motion? Okay, I'll put this motion now to the vote. Marilyn Kay?
I vote no to Kerry's motion.
Okay.
Could you repeat the motion, please?
The motion is that we defer voting on the motion that was proposed by Marilyn and Avery with respect to passing these suggested bylaw changes to the board. Defer voting on this topic until the middle of September when the European holiday period is over, as I understand.
Thank you.
So I've asked Marilyn, she said no. Grant Forsyth?
No.
Ken Stubbs?
In favour.
Kerry Carr?
In favour.
Philip Colville?
In favour, Bruce.
Bernie Harris?
No.
No. Just going back on the previous one, Grant, I believe you have a proxy for Philip Shepherd.
Yes, I do, and sorry, Philip votes no.
Okay. So Tony, you voted no. Tony Holmes, who's Tony's proxy to Glenn?
Yes, Tony Harris.
Okay. How do you vote Tony Holmes' proxy?
Tony Holmes votes no.
Greg Rue?
No.
Robin Gross?
I vote in favour.
Norbert Klein?
No.
That was no, was it? No.
Correct, that was no.
Ross Rader?
Sorry, we didn't get that last part, Bruce, from Norbert Klein.
I believe Norbert said zero, as in no.
Okay. Norbert Klein repeats the word is no.
Thank you.
Ross votes no as Maureen's proxy.
Okay, Tom Keller?
I'm voting no.
Lucy Nichols?
No.
Kyoshi Zuru? Okay, Nicholas Lagergren? Okay, Maureen was voted no through Ross. Alec Wilson?
Glenn, did you check to see if you got a proxy from him?
I have received no proxy for Alec Wilson. Has anybody else received that email?
I will check, but I had suggested to him he needed to send it to you, but let me look. We should proceed while I'm looking. I have nothing from him.
I have nothing from him either.
I just thought he was going to give his proxy to you, Bruce, but I don't know that.
I haven't received anything. Perpetual, let me check. You don't have anything that indicates that, Glenn?
No.
Look, I think if he has given the proxy to me, I won't vote it. But it is abstained. If it, I will say no. And so I count that there is basically...
I would vote no also. This is Afri.
Thank you, Afri. I have 7 votes in favour of the motion and the rest of the votes against, so we'll note that motion has failed. And now we'll put the motion that Marilyn and Avery had seconded. Do you want to restate your motion, please, Marilyn?
I'm happy to. The motion is that the council forward, as advice to the board, the suggested bylaw changes and note the support for and note that the council supports the board undertaking the proper public review process in order to consider approval of these bylaw changes.
Okay, and how do you vote on that motion, Marilyn?
I support it.
Grant Forsyth?
I support it, and I vote Phillips proxy in support.
Ken Stubbs? Kerry Karp?
I abstain.
Philip Colebrook?
I'll vote against this, Bruce.
You say no, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And Ken Stubbs again?
Abstain.
Tony Harris?
I'm in favour.
Tony Holmes?
Tony Holmes is in favour also.
Greg Ruth?
4.
Robin Gross?
Yes.
Norbert Klein?
I support it.
Sorry, can you repeat that, please, Norbert?
I support it.
Okay. That's enough. Thank you. Ross Rader?
I vote in favour, as does my proxy.
Okay, for more information. Tom Keller?
Yes.
Lucy Nichols?
I vote in favour.
Kyoshi Zuru? Nicholas Lagergren? And they're here. We don't have a vote for Alex. Avery.
I vote in favour.
And I vote in favour as well. So we will note that motion is carried. And we will...
It's Marilyn. I'm sorry, please proceed. I just need one to ask a question then.
Okay, I was just going to say, I will note that motion is carried and I will submit that to the ICANN Secretary for consideration by the board. And thank John Nevitt and Bhavan for joining all and providing some context for the background behind the suggested changes. Marilyn, you have the floor.
Now that the vote is concluded, I have a question of clarification to ask, but not in any way to affect the vote that has concluded. I would like clarification on what the guidance is to a counselor when they abstain from a vote, and I ask because it is possible I will need to abstain from a vote in an upcoming discussion. Are we required to describe why we're abstaining?
There are rules around a policy vote for consensus policy.
Okay.
And if you abstain from voting on a consensus policy, you would need to declare your reasons why, and they would generally be related to, you know, financial, direct financial consideration of some form.
Thank you.
This is Bhavan here. Bruce, I'd like to thank you and everybody else for letting us join on the call and sharing our thoughts. I'm going to step out now. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Bhavan. Okay, so back onto the agenda. Now, hopefully we can move through remaining items relatively quickly. Item 4, IDNs. Carrie, Tina forwarded something to the list that kind of implied this motion was no longer needed because...
I suppose I can do a lightning review of what's happened since we spoke this. At last, during the IETF meeting, there were a number of non-public discussions of various aspects of IDN and the problems that beset it. I will review those only if explicitly asked to do so. There was a public meeting of the DNS Ops Working Group, which was attended by three council members, Avery, Greg, and myself. I raised the question at the microphone when the agenda was being what they call bashed, stating that there were indeed three people involved in the oversight of ICANN policies in the room, and that we hoped we would be able to leave that meeting with some heightened understanding of the issues that attach to IDN. And I was told in answer to the specific question if that would be so, no. As the week progressed, that no became more emphatic. We can expect possibly the Internet Research Task Force to consider what they termed the medium-term issues with IDN. We cannot expect any immediate action from the IETF. I believe the IAB is still considering this. I know the Unicode Consortium is still considering this, and I know that the browser developer community is still considering this. ICANN agreed at a meeting last week, if Kurt's still on the call, he can perhaps tell me exactly what was said, where the task force for the revision of the ICANN IDN guidelines was the constitution of a task force was decided upon, and that task force will contain representatives of both the GTLD registries and the CCTLD registries. There are three reps expected from the G side, two from the C side, and pending the response from the CCTLDs, the first meeting of that task force will take place early in September, thus obviating any need for us to encourage staff to appoint such a task force.
Okay, so I think we'll just leave item 4 then as...
Actually, Bruce...
Can I add a comment also?
Bruce, I'd like to ask a question.
So I have... Was that...
I think it was Avi first, right?
Well, I think we both... We collided, so go first.
Here's my question, and my question is to ICANN staff as well as to Carrie. I understand there may not be an answer. However, my question is, while I really appreciate and acknowledge the importance of having the supplier side actively participate, I would like to know how the user side of the interested parties, and I will speak only for business users, how will they be able to participate and to comment along the way, if not involved at the beginning of the process?
I'm prepared to answer that if nobody from ICANN staff is, but I think it might be more appropriate for one of you guys to do so. No? Okay.
Why don't you go ahead, Carrie?
Review of the document that is to be produced is foreseen, where any interested party is both welcome and encouraged to contribute whatever might be reasonable, and that will be folded back into the iterative production of what will subsequently be a document that's put forward for decision. The terms of the current IDN guidelines state specifically that it is the IDN registries, together with ICANN staff, that's responsible for the maintenance of that document. And consistent with that, the task force has been designated. But again, the document that's to be produced by that task force is subject to all due public scrutiny.
Bruce, this is Brett. Can I get into the queue?
Yep. I think we've had someone else in the queue just before. for you, Brett. It was either Avery or Lucy or Gail.
I asked to be. This is Avery. I did ask Avery. To be. I don't know if Lucy also did.
Okay, go ahead, Avery, and then I'll...
Okay, I want to comment somewhat, just briefly, on the technical side of it within the IETF. First of all, the idea that they're going to put this into the IRTF for discussion is basically, I mean, the IRTF takes the long view on things and spends years going down all the rat holes. It's what it's supposed to do. Part of the response that's come back, I've had lots of conversations sort of in the background with people on this, is that they say, well, we don't really know what the problems are. And so one of the things that several of us are looking at, and I don't know whether it's something that others within the council want to get involved with, I certainly don't see it as a council activity, is basically presenting a internet draft, sort of discussing what the problems are, and then actually requesting a BOF at the next IETF in order to talk about this. Did have some initial discussions with area directors. While there certainly is an agreement, because they won't agree until they see a document, there's certainly a willingness to talk about it. So there is more to be done than just waiting for the IAB to put out its document and say, we'll let the IRTF deal with it. And the IRTF is only going to deal with sort of the general idea of code points. It's not really looking into it in what I consider a substantive way.
Thank you, Avery. Brett Forster?
Thanks, Bruce. We talked about this particular resolution that's on the agenda within the at-large, and believe that the working group, if the GNSO is going to call for one, should comprise members of the end users of IDNs, and would ask that the proposed motion be revised to suggest that the working group should comprise representatives from GTLD registries, CCTLD registries, application developers, persons appointed by the at-large advisory committee, and then the rest of the proposed motion. To include us in the recommendation. Thanks.
Sorry to speak, please.
Yeah, go ahead, Kerry.
And given that the task force has the decision to create this task force has been made and it is currently being populated, any motion that council might put forward would have to be significantly different than a suggestion to get a task force set up.
I don't understand. Kerry's comment.
Yeah, Kerry, it's Marilyn. I don't either. Are you suggesting we can't just present a motion asking to have the composition of the task force modified in this way?
Okay, but that's what we would need to move. The text that is in front of us at the moment suggests that we request staff to do something that staff has already done. So if we're going to request anything, we need to have a modification of the constituency of that task force. Board. But again, and now I think I do need Kurt to chime in. The ICANN guidelines describe quite specifically how they are to be maintained. So what we're actually doing is suggesting that there's something inappropriate about that declaration.
I think the IDN guidelines have been a technical document regarding the implementation of how IDNs are to be implemented and not break SAS and function with a new SAS. It's a somewhat different topic regarding implementation of IDNs from a policy standpoint or from other standpoint. That's why the document Kerry is referring to that way.
Let me just give a specific example, I'm interested to see whether you consider or Brett considers this issue or not. But one of the decisions that you can make is whether you will accept multiple language scripts in the same domain name. So let's say I had three characters in a domain name, and one of those characters come from the English character set, and another character come from the Cyrillic and another one from German, or do those three characters in the domain name all need to come from the same character set? Now, if that was a decision, is that, would that be considered to be just a technical implementation, or does that have policy implications?
May I answer at least partially that question?
Yeah, go ahead.
At the GTLD constituency meeting in Luxembourg, we agreed, all of us, that whatever the outcome of the modification of any of the relevant normative instruments might be, we would not be accepting registration of any names with mixed script and a single label unless there was clear linguistic warrant for doing so. And there are actually only a couple of very well understood nameable cases where that would be true. So since what we're talking about here is the behavior of GTLD registries, and the GTLD registries have already decided how they're going to be behaving on that point, that's something that just needs to be folded into the document rather than emanate from any discussion about how the document itself might be modified.
Excuse me, Mr. Klein has joined you.
Yeah, so I guess I was just trying to raise a point. I think that's a decision you've made, Carrie. You could just as easily make a different decision, and I guess the feeling I was getting from Brett and others is they felt perhaps users would want some input to say, yeah, look, we really want these characters, or no, we really don't want them, or whatever the case may be.
Well, there are two components to the discussion. The one is recognizing the inappropriateness of language-based policies as the exclusive mode for proceeding. We have to have script-based policies, and the obvious script-based policy is no mixed scripts and individual labels. That discussion has been conducted. The next issue is, what is the range of characters that are available for appearance in an IDN in any case? And there, the Unicode Consortium has prepared a technical report, which is subject to some discussion simply because it is a restriction vis-a-vis the original repertoire, but it's not quite as restrictive as many members of the community would like to see. And the number of discussion forums where the proper scope of this is being discussed, is being considered, is staggering. So if there is any need for an ICANN-specific such forum, as a matter of fact, there is already an ICANN-specific such forum. There was a discussion list set up specifically for this purpose many months ago that nobody has been using. So perhaps we might want to activate that as a reasonable mode for providing input to the task force that's going to be addressing two very, very mundane and specific technical issues and nothing else.
This is Brett. I want to understand where we are in the agenda, because I'm looking at item 4 on the agenda that was sent to us. Carrie's going to provide an update, which he's done. Then there's a proposed motion on the table. Has this actually been moved? What is the status of asking ICANN to establish a working group?
Yeah, Brett, what's happened is that ICANN's already established it, and so Carrie, they have established a working group with particular membership. Doesn't necessarily correspond to the membership of that motion, but they have established a working group to look at the IDN guidelines. Carrie has suggested that we don't need to move this motion in its current form because a working group has been established. Marilyn has since said that perhaps we do need to have a motion that says please add these other types of people to the current working group. So that's where we are at in the discussion.
Okay, that's very helpful. And I would, on behalf of the at-large, agree with Carolyn. We need to supplement this. And it may be purely technical issues that are being looked at, but I think at least for transparency purposes, we would like to have end users participate and if not provide, at least be able to participate actively in the conversation as it's happening, and be able to report back to the at-large groups.
Carrie, to speak again.
Okay.
Without in any way commenting on the reasonability of what has just been suggested, may I ask why all of these so deeply interested factions have been paying absolutely no attention to the forum that ICANN provided for the discussion of these very things that was open in February of this year?
Can I speak to that, Bruce?
Yes, go ahead, ma'am.
Let me take a thoughtful approach to how to respond about business users, since that is the form of users that I represent. business users often watch work that is going on and are very interested in it and choose a productive time when they can make a useful contribution. They typically count on technical discussions to advance pretty far. That may be impractical from some people's point of view, but it is a reality. Yet business users and individual users are those who must be able to live with the consequences of decisions which are made on the technical side. I think that what we're trying to offer is a friendly amendment in a way that could help to keep users informed but not impede technical work. And certainly users sometimes want things that cannot be supported practically or affordably in an end-to-end interoperability internet. So I would hope that what we're proposing is an information flow and awareness process and not in any way going to be disruptive, and that all these forums that have been going on will continue. I attended as much of the IDN forum as I could in Luxembourg, and not being able to attend all, but I read all of the materials that I could. So I have been following it, but not on a day-to-day basis.
I'd sort of flip the question and say, you know, what is the point of excluding end users who are asking to participate at this point?
I can answer that without intending the slightest disrespect for the scope of anybody's knowledge about the broad picture. This IDN problem is a problem because it involves matters of significant intricacy that are not readily amenable to understanding. And the people who participate in these task forces, the various groups that are addressing the normative issues here, need to be well-versed in all of this if the groups are going to get anywhere. So if this task force is charged with the rapid dispatch of modifying the first version of the IDN guidelines, that effort will not be abetted by the participation of people who haven't done particularly much thinking about this previously. And I don't know quite what the time frame is, and how rapidly we have to respond. But if there's going to be a document signed, sealed, and delivered, a document ready for decision by the time we reach Vancouver, the participants in this discussion have to have some prior understanding of the issues that the group's addressing. Where are these people? Where they certainly haven't appeared in any of the prior discussions that ICANN has been coordinating on this.
You know, it's a question of when do you want to flesh out concerns? Do you want to get it out on the table now, or do you want to have people take the microphone in Vancouver?
You know,
you want to get concerns now and get buy-in to the extent possible from the end-user community as early as possible. It just doesn't make sense to be exclusive to me.
But there have been open microphones where these concerns have been voiced for the past several ICANN meetings. And I'm not quite sure what exactly it is that remains to be said that hasn't been said. And turning the task force into a forum for noting, in fact, that all of the various partial issues have been articulated doesn't really seem to me to be a good way to get that task force to do the very banal but focused thing that it needs to do as rapidly as possible.
Bruce, can I ask a question of other counselors real quickly?
Yeah, I'd like to get in the queue as well, please.
Ross first and then Marilyn, because I think Ross hasn't spoken yet.
I want to propose a solution, I hope.
I'd just like to understand what the distinction is that you're making, Kerry. I don't see any particularly healthy qualification process to judge the technical capabilities of anybody in this task force. So to do it along the lines of affiliation, I think is highly inappropriate. Criteria are being applied by any of the other technical bodies. I can go to an ITF meeting, I can join the Birds of a Feather, I can join those working groups, and I can participate if I have something to add. And I think to the extent that we're capable of facilitating that in this process, I think we're much better off for it. But to simply say that users or registrars or anybody isn't welcome simply because they may not be technically qualified, then we should have technical qualification criteria in place to actually make those judgments and not just do it arbitrarily.
If that's what you have understood me to say, then I have been woefully deficient in my choice of words. I am not suggesting anything about qualifications to speak. I'm talking about the fact that the current IDN guidelines are, let me quote from them, to be revised. There are some registries that have a contractual obligation to adopting policies on the basis of these guidelines. Otherwise, they can't accept registration for IDN. And where do we have it? I'm looking desperately for it. Okay, in any case, the guidelines as they currently exist are to be revised at regular intervals by the IDN registries and ICANN. That's exactly what's going on right now. And if we're going to be redefining the process whereby these guidelines are maintained, that's the way we need to approach this discussion. And just shoehorning people into an aggregate that's described in the guidelines as they currently stand isn't really what... again, I fail to see where it's going to take us.
Well, that, and ICANN. That's me. That's you. That's,
ICANN that's, staff. Oh, I'm, why
no, it doesn't say ICANN staff. It says and ICANN. And that's the community.
I would like to propose a possible solution.
Yeah, go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you.
I think this is a very important topic to users. And I think that because it's so important to users is actually why it's important to suppliers.
That's not proposing a solution. That's
yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would just so wish...
Wait. I want to propose a solution. So my suggestion, if Brett would accept my friendly amendment, would be that unless there is another volunteer from the business user representative side, I would support the idea that the ALAC representation be in particular included, and that there also be an assurance of a process, which I'm sure will be there anyway, for an ongoing feedback loop into the council for us to keep the rest of the constituencies informed.
Well, the other way I'd approach it, I was just looking at the wording that Tina Dan provided me, and I don't know how formalised it's been, but my understanding is that Tina has requested input from the CCNSO, and that's using it in the generic sense, so CCNSO as a supporting organisation.
Right.
Now, Tina has invited members of the registry constituency, as Carrie has pointed out, but perhaps we would ask Tina to invite members of the GNSO to participate. And if that invitation came to the GNSO through the council, I would then, as a registrar rep, say, you know, are there any registrars that would like to be involved? And you can ask your business people. I do take Kerry's point that you would be saying to those people, this will be, you know, this is going to be a highly technical discussion. We would prefer people that are well versed in this. But I do know that there are members of the registrars that are pretty well versed in this and could participate. And certainly there are customers of registrars, and one of the things I had suggested is that we don't seem to be engaging as a GNSO enough of the application developers, the web browsers and the email developers, and I'd like at a GNSO level to try and embrace that community some more, but certainly I would have thought they would be consulted too.
Right.
So what I would suggest is if we wanted to make a motion on this, that we would simply make a motion that that ICANN invite participants from the GNSO to participate in the task force. Probably as simple as that.
That certainly fulfills the concern that I'd raised.
And if we wanted to extend it to address Brett's concern, we could say that the GNSO Council requests ICANN to invite members of the GNSO and the at-large advisory committee.
Bruce, could I ask you, recognizing that sometimes task forces can get too large, could we propose suggesting that these groups identify particular individuals who would accept the responsibility for participating?
Yeah, I think that's right. I agree. I'm not quite sure how you manage the selection process. What you they notify the GNSO chair or something, and then we'd select someone, or how do you see that working?
I'd ask Brett to comment on this, but I would assume it would be the invitation would go to you, and we would ask for the constituencies to put forward nominations, and then we would pick someone who would act as a rapporteur and therefore take responsibility for keeping people informed. And by the way, it could be that no one would volunteer.
Yeah, it could be. Exactly, yeah.
Bruce?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Ken Stubbs. I don't want to call this a point of order, but rather a strong suggestion. It's 2 hours into the call. We are on item 4 out of 12 items. My suggestion would be that we, first of all, that this be done off the council call by email. I don't see any reason why we couldn't craft this motion and have the council vote on it by email, because it just would seem to me to work more efficiently. Secondly, I strongly suggest you take a look at the additional items on the agenda and possibly push some of these forward to another meeting, or let's take them someplace else, because at the rate we're going, this is going to end up being a 4 or 5 hour call. Thank
you. Yes, thank you, Ken. You're quite right about time. I'm happy to look at drafting something slightly differently. I drafted this original motion on the basis that it hadn't been created yet. I can draft something else, and we can bounce that around the list, and certainly we can identify if there are any volunteers that would want to be involved. Just looking at the remaining items, some of them, I was hoping this one would have been a pretty short one. Item 5 is a motion to create an information area. I'm hoping we could just sort of formalise a couple of those things that we came out from the last meeting. Has anyone got anything for or against item 5, which is just basically saying that the GNSO requests that the staff create an information area on the website for developers of software that use domain names? The area would contain contributions on how best to use new TLDs and IDNs and applications. Press releases for new TLDs should contain a direct link to this information area. Are people just happy to vote on that very quickly, or do they want to have a discussion on that item?
I'd like to go ahead and move that motion as it's presented here. Move for a vote on that, please.
I'll re-second it.
Okay. All those in favour, say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay. Vote that one passed. The next one was, again, something that's been discussed in previous meetings. And this was creating a working group similar to the transfers working group to have a look at the current compliance of registrars with the existing WHIS requirements. And so the motion is that the GNSO agrees to create a working group to work with ICANN staff to review the effectiveness of the current contractual requirements with respect to accuracy. The group would look at the WHIS data problem reporting system report of March of 2004, the follow-up report of November, and get some information on the compliance plan, and that working group was chaired by Nicholas Pagoglin. Again, this is just stating what we discussed in the previous call. We were comfortable putting that to the vote as well. Anyone want to propose voting on that?
You got sort of low on that, and I missed part of what you were saying.
Sorry. I'm talking about item 6, which is a motion that was discussed in the last call about creating a working group of the GNSO to review the current contractual requirements with respect to WHIS accuracy and their effectiveness in the same way that we are reviewing the effectiveness of the current transfers policy.
Thank you.
And that group would be chaired by Nicholas Lagergren.
I will make a motion that we... Is that what you're looking for, Bruce?
Yes.
I'll make a motion that we charter that group. It is a working group, not a task force, and that we ask Nicholas to ask the volunteers, that could be counselors and non-counselors, to begin to undertake that work.
I'll second that.
Yeah, Ken Stubbs, I'll second.
Thank you. All those in favour, please say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, we'll note that one passed as well. The remaining items there, some of this I think really relates to scheduling some further meetings. So we've received a paper from Olaf Nordling, which is an update of the various decisions that have been made on new TLDs in the past. I've reviewed that fairly carefully, and I submitted my analysis of that to the council a few days ago. But essentially, I think they're kind of two threads of work that's happened there. The first thread was that the Names Council recommended creating new TLDs, recommended a proof of concept round, then recommend that round be evaluated before continuing to open it up more widely. As far as I know, it's gone to every... We've done all the steps there except approved going ahead and continuing to do TLDs. So where there was a report from Miriam Shapiro that was presented in a public forum that the council nor the board have said, yes, based on that report, we should continue to go ahead with new TLDs. So I think the closure... We should have closure on that proof of concept round. The second thread is basically assuming that we are introducing new TLDs, what are the issues that need to be addressed in coming up with a process?
Excuse me, Norbert Klein has joined.
ICANN's produced documents that describe all the different parties that need to be consulted in creating that process, and my position, I guess, is that the GNSO should manage developing the objective criteria for introducing new TLDs, and we need to work with the staff to identify how many TLDs could be added at a single point of time. So presumably there'd be some sort of process where you'd introduce a certain number each year, and then address any issues such as if you were introducing a limited number and you had many applications, how you would assign the applications. Finally, things that have come up more recently with things like XXX is, do there need to be any restrictions on what TLDs there are allowed to be? So those are kind of, to me, the two main threads. I think we should have a separate call, council call to talk about the next steps with respect to new TLDs, discussing with the staff. And develop a GNSO plan for what we believe we need to do in a few months. Once we have that plan, we would then present that to the board for its endorsement, I guess. Are there any quick comments on this, particularly the idea of having a separate meeting on this topic?
This is Aubrey. I certainly don't see us getting it done in the context of the regular meeting, so I think that's probably the only idea.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, Bruce, this is Brett. I certainly endorse that idea, and I'm going to have to get off the call, so another call would be terrific. I'll follow up online.
Thank you, Brett.
Bruce, it's Marilyn. I would like to suggest that perhaps we are having calls, perhaps we look at a different day of the week. If we could just make a list of the meetings we need to have, because I think we're going to have more than one in order to get our work done, and perhaps we could just ask Glenn to just pull a calendar up, and then we could come back to all of our organizing very shortly.
Yeah, I think what we should do at this point is just perhaps collect those meetings together. The one other item that's on the agenda for today is single letter domain names, and I would ask Marilyn if we can hold that over to the next meeting?
Really need to introduce it very quickly today.
Okay, we'll do that now, and then we'll talk about scheduling.
Okay, shall I go ahead?
Yes.
I appreciate the opportunity to introduce the topic. I want to open my comment by noting to my fellow counselors that I did contact the ICANN staff about this topic at the request of an interested party, that is someone who is interested in the outcome. And so I want it noted that I do have an interest in the eventual determination of the policy on this topic. I would like to request the development of an issues report from the GNSO staff addressing how to make single-letter domain names at the second level that are now in reserve status available for registration in the generic TLD space. This is specific to the existing TLDs and involves single-letter registrations of such names as i.net, i.com, t.com, etc. It could include the issue of how to unreserve other reserved names, but my specific request is related to the release of the letters. I am aware that the staff has received inquiries on this from a number of companies and that there are about five of these names that have been assigned, and I believe it actually requires, first of all, an issues report and then a vote by the council to charter a policy process if the council supports that after review of the issues report.
Mute off. Bruce, might I... I think before we consider the question of how we do this, we need to discuss whether or not we should be doing this, whether or not this is an issue that warrants our attention or not. And certainly, I think as you tried to get to, Bruce, this, we probably don't have the time to do that on this call, but it's certainly something that we should discuss further before we start talking about how.
This is Bobby. Can I make a comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
I sort of see it as filling into the previous discussion that we deferred in terms of talking about GTLD policy. This seems to me one issue within that overall umbrella.
I need to offer a clarification of what I'm proposing. May I do that?
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Okay. The GTLD policy that we are considering is about the authorization of top-level domains. My request is specific to the release of reserved names at the second level. And while I appreciate the fact that, as Ross is saying, we need more time to discuss it, ICANN has received a number of requests from interested parties, and I'd like to at least have a short response from the ICANN staff about that.
These requests date from how far back, Marilyn?
Can I refer that to the ICANN staff?
Yeah, because it's more of a rhetorical question. I think we're dealing with requests that probably go back, because you know, if we want to look at in IANA terms, probably as early as the 80s. So resolving things this week is probably not as...
Ross, I'm not trying to resolve things this week. I'm trying to request an issues report so that staff could come back and advise us.
And I'm saying we should probably discuss whether or not we need that issues report further.
Okay, but I think this is again. You know, my preference is to hold it off to a following meeting as well, just because I can't see how us delaying this is a significant problem. But I'm happy for the staff to respond if they believe it's a pressing issue that they're getting many requests that they need to deal with. Is anyone from the staff want to respond?
Well, this is Kurt. We have been approached by more than one firm requesting the exploration if single-letter domains could be released, and if so, how. And in order to make that determination, well, it's a two-step process. One is those names were reserved some years ago for technical reasons. Informal discussions, there's a understanding that a lot of those technical or all of those technical issues went away. But from a policy standpoint, we discuss how to release those names. You know, we first have to.
Can I just clarify that? Are you able to clarify for me whether you already have a draft or an existing document that you can make available, or is this, are we asking you to do a significant amount of work?
There's the rough draft of a document that I need to...
But could I... One of the concerns I have on this, Marilyn, is just the terminology of issues report has a particular meaning in the policy development process, and so once you've issued the issues report...
I'm happy perhaps to modify this to say a background briefing.
Yeah, I think if we make it, it's a background briefing, and we'd handle it under, you know, similar to the WIPO 2 report. We're not asking for a policy development process here.
A status report.
Sorry?
status report, perhaps, Bruce?
A status report, I think. If it's a request from council for a status report on single letter domains, and if Kurt's got a document that he can just tender to the council in the same way Olaf produced the paper on past TLD decisions and so on, so we're not actually kicking off a formal policy development process here.
And I'm happy to accept that as a modification. I will note that actually you don't kick off a formal policy development process till after you get an issues report and then vote to do so. So I think this will take a step of providing a background briefing, and we can perhaps even do that electronically, and then we can schedule this for further discussion after people are have had a chance to review that. Does that seem like a reasonable?
Yeah, I think so. So if you want to propose a motion that, well, you don't even probably need to propose a motion. It's just a request to staff just to provide a status report under item 2 of the next meeting.
I'm happy to make that request.
Carrie to speak, please.
Yeah, go ahead, Carrie.
I have one question and one request for clarification. The question is, has anybody taken a close look at how densely populated the CC namespace may be with one-letter, second-level labels? Because there are automated procedures for requesting them. I know it's very easy to count the numbers that might already appear in the G space, but the CC space, I think, also needs to be, census needs to be taken to the CC space. And the second is, I mean, given the significance of this action, is this something that is being put forward by the business constituency, or is this just an individual counselor asking for policy action?
Carrie, I thought I was clear about this, that this is an individual counselor, which is, of course, what the bylaws specify can happen. But, of course, we have now modified the request, and that is a request for a background briefing. I will just say, make a quick comment on the CC space. I've looked a little bit at it, but I am not addressing at this point here the CC space. That wouldn't be appropriate for me to do.
This is John. Could I be in the queue?
Yeah, go ahead, John Jeffries.
It's important to note that we've received a number of requests between 3 and 5 in the last year, and that we have referred them to the GNSO as the appropriate place to discuss this as a policy. And I believe that a number of them have approached Maryland directly, and this is where it's derived from.
That's right. And when I said I was approached by an interested party, I thought I was being clear, but perhaps not. Thank you, John.
Yeah,
Bruce, it's Grant here. Can I suggest we move on unless the staff object to receiving this request?
I'm quite happy to move on, Grant. It's fine. So now I think we're really just talking about more or less planning of further meetings. We need to have two meetings on the terms of reference for the GNSO review. I think we need to have a focused meeting on the new TLD topic. Are there any other meetings that and I'm talking about between now and normally scheduled, which is third week of September.
We did discuss the idea of having an administrative coordinating meeting. Would you be thinking that that would not happen because we are going to do these policy working meetings?
I think so, Marilyn, because I know from my ability to do late-night phone calls several times a week is limited.
Yeah. No, I'm satisfied with that. I just wanted to make sure that that was clear.
Bruce?
Yes?
Yeah, my suggestion would be that if we have another meeting, we have enough on our plate right now to cover at least one additional meeting, that the agenda of those meetings be specifically limited, and that we just go in on that basis, because we've got to find a better way of managing our agendas and our time so that we can at least get this stuff off of our plate before we get too much further down the road.
Yep, I agree, Ken. My intent is really to have meetings with a particular topic, and that's what the meeting's about. I mean, we could cover 10-15 minutes of administration in one of those meetings, but that would be it. And the 90-80% of the time should be spent on the topic of that meeting. Okay, well, what I will do, I'll take this off the call because I know where it's all time's gone over a bit. I will send an email to the list. I'll discuss with Glenn and put up some suggested dates for, I think, the meetings I've just discussed, a bit of a schedule, so a schedule to deal with the TLD topic, the review of the Genus O topic, and intersperse that with our next meeting.
And Bruce, Glenn will be aware of this. Every other Tuesday we have Who Is Task Force Calls.
Okay.
Bruce, can I just make a quick comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
On the GNSO side, I would be happy to prepare, as Grant has suggested, in a very targeted, focused agenda, and I will amend, given the comments that have happened today about the timeline, I'll make that very up-to-date, and I can submit that to you, and you can distribute that around when you send out the notice for the meeting.
Okay,
could I request that would be sooner rather than later, please?
Yes, I will try and do that tomorrow my time in terms of seeing the dates.
Thank you.
Okay, any other business?
Bruce, it's Grant here.
Yep.
Item 11 is a proposal. All I was hoping is that there would be support for that proposal such that the program committee, as you've now constituted it, would take that into account in constructing the agenda for Vancouver.
Yes, in fact, if you have a look at the Excel spreadsheet that I sent round to the council, that's been included on there. And I've also liaised with the chair of the CCNSO to provide his support on having a meeting as well.
I have seen that, and I guess at this stage it's more appropriate that I respond to that sort of detail online, which I'll do.
Yes, thank you.
Bruce, is this the retreat that I originally had proposed?
Yes, that's correct.
Meeting?
Yep. It's been called a number of different things, Ken, but yes, it is the retreat. It is the Joint Council Board meeting. It's intended to meet those requirements. And the intent, Ken, just to give you some more detail, my intent was that we have a very focused agenda for that meeting. And what we're trying to do at this stage is allocate time in the schedule in Vancouver to have the meeting. And then once we have the time allocated, then we need to work closely with the board on an agenda for that meeting, so it's fairly focused.
Thanks, Bruce.
Okay, any other business anyone wants to raise?
I think, Bruce, this is all still back to what I proposed on the strategic planning process. Well, that's something which will be better done by email, I think.
Yes, when I find the email, I may have got it, I'm not sure. I
forwarded a copy just for good measure.
Thank you. Okay, well, at that point, we'll close the call and thank you, everybody, for attending.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.